Good morning, everyone.
Last week we completed our reading of Book 2, Canto 5, The Godheads of the Little Life. And after showing to all these tendencies and influences and entities who influence us, he says, wherever love and light and largeness lack, these little beings do their work. But towards the end of the canto, he told us that we are not, we human beings are not condemned to live always in this little life, on the level of the little life. There will come a higher realization. We shall learn at last who lived within unseen and seized with marvel in the adoring heart, to the enthroned child Godhead, kneel, aware, trembling with beauty and delight and love. But first, we must achieve the spirit's ascent. There are high realizations to come before we can have that experience. So King Aswapati sees all this. He's, in detail, he's seen the kingdoms of the little life. And now he will move on to the kingdoms and godheads of the greater life. But to do that, he has to pass through a kind of transitional zone, which isn't in either of these worlds. It's astral chaos. There he's unable really to see where he's going, and he seems to be surrounded by very threatening beings in the gloom, in the darkness. There's something obstructing his forward movement. Around him, an extinguished phantom glow, peopled with shadowy and misleading shapes. The vague, inconscience, dark, and measureless cave. His only sunlight was his spirit's flame. This transitional stage continues throughout the first section of the canto to the break on page 175. In canto 6, we have 6 sections, and this first one, it continues the description of this transition between the worlds. So I think that we can start by reading. We can read up to the break on page 183 and then go back and look in more detail. Shall we start at the back today? Chitra, would you read?
In receding walls, towards the far beam of the tunnel's mouth, hoping for light, walks now with freer pace and feels approach the breath of vital air. So he escaped from the great flood. Into an ineffectual world he came, a purposeless region of arrested world, where being long being fled and dead to live, but had no strength long to abide. Above there, being the wandering globe of the sky, tormented, crossed by winds of doubtful days, adventuring with the voice of moaning winds, and crying for direction in the void, like blind souls looking for the sevens they lost, and wandering through unfamiliar worlds. Winds of vague uncertain track, his journey came, where consciousness played with unconscious self, and birth was an attempt of itself. A chance drew near that could not keep its stealth, an eager power that could not find its way. A chance that chose a strange arithmetic, but could not bind with it the forms it made. A multitude that could not guard its sum, which less than zero, grew and more than one.
Thank you. Shin.
Large and shadowy sense that cared not to define its deep winter. Life revelled in its strange native air, delivered of a sweet, magnificent sunset, in worlds imagined, never yet made true, lingering in dimma from creation's birth, one straight and dream and never stopped to achieve. To achieve, we have destroyed the imagined space. The novels, the light, under that, full of beauty, strangeness, waking air, a surge of fanciful realities, dim tokens of splendor, seen there. Evoke the passion of the eyes desire. Compel belief on the enamored part. And drew the heart, but yet it did not hold. The magic flow as if of no sense that kept awhile the fugitive legacy of Spartan lines named by an abstract art. In a rare, scattered light, with faint dream brush on a single background of
thank you. Duan?
The infant glow of heavens near to law, a fire intense conceived with gathering, carries the air with pondering insulting. The earth long for imperfection shone, illuminate, dark by the stare of the heavens, ethereal creatures. And bodies learn to that region of promise, beating invisible wings and heavy for the joy of faith. Finite one, the true divine, who dreads created soul and share the faith of perishable things. The children of the unembodied dream. Arising from a formless thought in the soul, and chased by an imperishable desire, traverse the field of a pursuing gaze, a will that unconsistent faith worked there. Life was the search that finally never came. There, nothing satisfied, but all alert, things seemed to be that never holy on. Images were seen that looked like living acts, the sinners' little sense they claimed to show. Pale dreams grew real through the dreamer's eyes. The soul came there, the faintly strife of love, and spirits and dread might wander through all time, yet never find the truth by which they live. All went like hopes that earned the love and cherish. Nothing was solid, nothing felt complete. All was unsaid, miraculous and half true. It seemed the real of lives that had no days.
Thank you. Doris.
Then long the great seeking world and sky, the journey and the wings of the force. First came the kingdom of the morning star, and twilight beauty trembled under its spear, and the thought of promise of a brighter light. Then slowly rose the great and daunting sun, and in its light she made of self and a world. A spirit was there that thought of what its own deep self, yet most pungent and pregnant question and task of living that delight the moment, that pieced together not only in the truth, yet something seemed to be achieved at last. A growing volume of the world, a text of living and a breath of force, a script of facts, a song of conscious forms, burdened with meaning fugitive from thought's grasp, and crowded with undertones of life with its pride, could write itself on the heart's living things. In an outbreak of the mind of secret spirit, in life and measure answer of demand, some face of definite beauty could be called. They gave immortality to a man's joy. Some words they could infinitely prize without any chance attention of the soul. Some yield absolute could fall on earth. Some glory of knowledge and intuitive sight. Some passion of the rapturous heart of love.
Thank you. Karen?
A hierophant of the wondrous secrecy, interned in an unseen spiritual sheath, the will that pushed sense beyond its scope to feel the light and joy intangible. Half found its way into the ineffable peace, half captured the sealed sweetness of desire that yearned from a bosom of mysterious bliss, half manifested, veiled reality. A soul not wrapped into its coat of mind could glimpse the true sense of a world of forms, illumined by a vision in the throat, upbuoyed by the heart's understanding flame, it could hold in the conscious ether of the spirit the divinity of a simple unit.
Thank you. Chalan, will you read?
This realm inspires us with our vast hopes. Its forces have made landings on our globe. Its signs have faced their pattern in our lives. It tends a sovereign moment to our fate. Its event waves move our life's high souls. All that we seek for is prefigured there, and all we have not known nor ever sought, which yet one day must be born in human hearts, that the timeless may fulfill itself in things. Incarnate in the mystery of the days, eternal in an unclosed infinite, a mounting endless possibility, climbs on a topless ladder of dream, forever in the being's conscious trance. All on that ladder mounts to an unseen end, an energy of perpetual transience makes the journey from which no return is sure, the pilgrimage of nature to the unknown.
Thank you. Naren.
As if in an ascent to her lost source, she hoped to unroll all that earth could ever be. Her high possession moves from stage to stage, a progress lead from sight to greater sight, a process marked from form to non-clear form, a caravan of inexhaustible formations of a boundless thought and force. A timeless power that lay once on the lap of a beginningless and endless calm, now smeared from the spirit's immortal bliss, erects the type of all the compelling transient substance into shape. She hopes by the privilege that she leaves to hold her sometimes the gulf she cannot fill, to heave a while the bound of silence, escape from the moment's prison of emptiness, and meet the eternal's wide sublimities. In the uncertain nine-feet ocean here, almost she nears what never can be attained. She shuts eternity into an hour, and fills a little soul with the infinite. The immobile leads to the magic of her call. She stands on a shore in the illimitable, perceives the formless dweller in all forms, and feels around her infinite countries.
Thank you. Do you like to read?
But ask no animals, she serves no thing, but labors driven by an endless wind,
great and impossible task. To cast the Godness in an end of birth, to cast the Spirit into physical form, to lend speech and thought to the ineffable. She is pushed to revealing ever unmanifest, yet by a skill the impossible has been done. She follows a sublime irrational plan, invents devices of a magic art. To find new bodies for the infinite, and images of the unimaginable, she has brought the eternal into the arms of time. Even now herself, she knows now not what she has done. For all is wrought beneath a bathroom mask, a semblance other than its hidden truth. The aspect wears of an illusion strict, a faint time-driven unreality. The unfinished creation of a changing soul, in a body changing with the inhabitant. Insignificant her means, infinite her work, on a great field of shapeless consciousness, in little finite strokes of mind and sense. An endless truth she endlessly unfolds, a timeless mystery works out in mind.
Thank you. Gani?
The greatness she has been, hacks, and missed. Her labor is a passion and a pain, a rapture and plan, her glory and her curse. And yet she cannot choose but labors on. Her mighty heart forbids her to desist as long as the world lasts, her failure is. Astonishing and failing wizard's gaze, a folly and a beauty unspeakable, a subtle madness of the will to live. A daring, a delirium of delight. This is her being's law, its sole resource. She says, though satisfaction never comes. Her hungry will to lavish everywhere. Her many image fictions of herself and thousand fashions of her own reality. The world she made touched by truth being none. The world cast into a dream of what it seeks. An icon of truth. Conscious mystery's shape, it injured not like the earth's mind hemmed in solid barriers of apparent fact. There to first the green mind of the soul.
Thank you. Would you like to read Sakaji?
This greater life is an myriad of things. It calls to some highest breath beyond its speech. It can feel the silence that resolves. It feels the savory touch for reading.
Thank you. Children.
Only repeating this greatness must create on earth, in heaven, she is the same. Of every fate, she takes a mighty part. The guardian of the fire that lights the suns, she triumphs in her glory and her might. Opposed, oppressed, she bears God's urge to be born. Her spirit survives that the non-beings come. World force outlasts world with a dizzy wind shock. Dumb, she steals the world in every power. Here fallen, the slave of death and ignorance. To things deathless, she is driven to aspire. And moved to know even the unknowable. Even the ancient man, her sleep creates a world. When most unseen, most mighty she was. Housed in the atom, buried in the cloud, her quick creative passion cannot cease. Inconscience is her own gigantic force. Her cosmic swoon is a stupendous phase. Time born, she hides her immortality. In death, her bed, she reached the hour to rise. Even with the light denied that sent her forth, and the hope that she needed for her task, even when her bright stars are quenched in night, nourished by hardship and calamity, and with pain for her body's family, muscles, nerves, her tortured, invisible spirit continues still to toil, full in darkness, to create, though with thanks, she carries crucified blood upon her breast.
Thank you. Francis? Thank you. Patricia.
Ever she summons, as by a sorcerer's wand, beings and shapes and scenes innumerable, torchbearers of her haunts through time and space. This world is her long journey through the night. The suns and planets, lamps to light early. Our reason is the confidant of her thoughts. Our senses are her vibrant witnesses. There, drawing her signs from things half true, half false, she labors to replace by realized dreams the memory of her lost eternity. These are her deeds in this huge world of ignorance, till the veil is lifted, till the night is dead. In light or dark, she keeps her tireless search. Time is her road of endless pilgrimage. One mighty passion motives all her works. Her eternal lover is her action's cause. For him she leaped forth from the unseen vasts to move here in a stark unconscious. His acts are her commerce with her hidden guest. His moods she takes for her heart's passionate moments. In beauty she treasures the sunlight of his smile. Ashamed of her rich cosmic poverty, she cajoles with her small gifts his mightiness, holds with her scenes his looks fidelity, and woos his large-eyed wandering thoughts to dwell in figures of her million impulsed force, only to attract her veiled companion and and keep him close to her breast in her world cloak, lest from her arms he turn to his formless peace, is her heart's business and her clinging care.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yet when he is most near, she feels him far, for contradiction is her nature's law. Although she is ever in him, and he in her, as if unaware of the eternal tie, her will is to shut God into her works and keep him as her cherished prisoner, that never they may part again in time. A sumptuous chamber of the spirit's sleep, at first she made, a deep interior room, where he slumbers as if a forgotten guest, but now she turns to break the oblivious bed, awakes the sleeper on the sculptured couch. She finds again the presence in the form, and in the light that waits with him, recovers a meaning in the hurry and treasure of time. And through this mind that once obscured the soul, passes a glint of unseen beauty across a luminous dream of spirit space. She builds creation like a rainbow bridge between the original silence and the void. A net is made of the mobile universe. She weaves a snare for the conscious infinite. A knowledge is with her that conceals its steps and seems a mute, omnipotent ignorance.
Thank you. A might is with her that makes wonders true. The incredible is her stuff of common fact. Her purposes, her workings, riddles prove. Examined, they grow other than they were. Explained, they seem yet more inexplicable. Even in our world, a mystery has reigned. Earth's cunning screen of trivial plainness hides. Her larger levels are of sorceries made. There the enigma shows its splendid prism. There is no deep disguise of commonness. Occult, profound, comes all experience. Marvel is ever new, miracle divine. There is a screened burden, a mysterious touch. There is a secrecy of hidden sense. Although no earthen mask weighs on her face, into herself she flees from her own sight. All forms are tokens of some veiled idea whose covert purpose lurks from mind's pursuit, yet is a womb of sovereign consequence. There, every thought and feeling is an act, and every act a symbol and a sign, and every symbol hides a living power, a universe she builds from truths and myths. But what she needed most, she cannot. All shown is a figure or copy of the truth, but the real veils from her its mystic face. All else she finds, there lacks eternity. All is sought out, but miss the infinite. So we can go back to page 173 and look more closely at these mysterious lines.
I presume that she is nature.
Life.
Life.
Yes, nature, the creative force. You like to read, Prasad?
Canto 6, the kingdoms and goddess of the greater life. As one move between dim receding walls, towards the far gleam of tunnel's mouth, hoping for light, walks now with a freer pace, and feels approach a breath of wider air. So you escaped from that grey anarchy. Into an ineffectual world he came, a purposeless region of arrested birth, where being from non-being fled and dared, dared to live, but had no strength long to abide. Above there gleamed a pondering brow of sky, tormented, crossed by wings of doubtful haze, adventuring with the voice of roaming winds and crying for a direction in the void, like a blind soul looking for the selves they lost, and wandering through unfamiliar worlds, wings of vague questioning met the quarry of space.
Thank you.
Ineffectual,
not effective.
It's described in the next lines.
Okay.
In that ineffectual world, he says, arrested birth.
Yeah, that means
things get half born, not fully, and so existence is somehow escaping from non-existence, daring to live, but doesn't have the strength to remain for long.
Mm-hmm.
We can compare this with the passage at the beginning of Canto 3, where he first entered the worlds of life. It was also a very, very doubtful, impermanent, quaking realm. No? Nothing was sure or steady, and then he's having passed through the kingdoms of the little life, he had to pass through this. In order to move on, he had to pass through this, cut his way through this astral chaos, which is inhabited by the grey faces of demon gods. An obstruction, complaining against light. It's really a terrifying sounding realm, this hostile mass of dead and staring eyes. He says this is the vague, inconscience, dark and measureless cave. Between one realm and the next, he has to pass through these transitional regions. So now he's escaped from the worst of that. It's as if he's escaping out of a dark tunnel. He can walk more freely, he feels the breath of a wider air, and he escapes from that state of grey anarchy. But the world that he comes into is not much better. It's again full of doubt and uncertainty. There are blind souls looking for the selves they lost. They're wandering through unfamiliar worlds. These are souls who have got lost on their way. But that lasts only up to line 16, and then there's a change.
The line 5, it says that he escaped from the grey anarchy.
Yes.
Is it a journey from grey anarchy to the divine anarchy?
No, not yet. I mean, it is eventually, yeah. I suppose. You mean when we get to the end of the journey?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yes.
This is the journey.
Of course, when we get to the end of the journey in book 11, then something like what Mother called divine anarchy. Yes. That was the grey anarchy of this lowest life level. But then, the next lines, there's a change. Fanny, would you read? It's line 17, after denial.
After denial, goes a virtuous hope, a hope of self and form, and means to live, and the birth of that which never yet could be, and joy of the mind's power, the heart's choice, grace of the unknown and hand for struggling surprise, a sure delight in unsure things, whose strange uncertain track his joy came, her consciousness played with unconscious death, and birth was an attempt or a deal. A charm drew near, but could not keep its spell. a legal power that could not find its way, a chance that chose the strange arithmetic but could not bind with it the forms it made, a multitude that could not guard its front, which less than zero grew and more than one.
It's quite mysterious, but at least there's some hope. It may be a dubious hope, but there does seem to be a sense of a possibility of something real, of self and form, the possibility of living, the birth of what never yet could be, but which could perhaps be in the future. Joy of the mind's hazard, the mind can envisage new possibilities. The heart can choose. Even there's a touch of grace of the unknown, hands of sudden surprise, touch of sure delight in unsure things. That's the new experience in this strange, uncertain track, where there's this play of consciousness with unconsciousness, where birth is an attempt or a short episode. And then these mysterious lines. A charm drew near that could not keep its spell, it couldn't keep its enchantment. An eager power, but it can't find its way. And things seem to happen randomly, by chance. A chance that chose a strange arithmetic, but could not bind with it the forms it made. That those forms are a multitude, but the quantity of the number of them is fluctuating, sometimes less than zero, sometimes more than one.
What is that last line?
What does it mean? I don't know what it means.
Chance is one, and then you divide it into proportions. So like 100% is one, that is fluctuating between zero and one, full range.
Yes. I remember right at the very early stages of our solitary study circle, decades ago, Shadaluko came and he spoke about this line. He said there does seem to be in the physical manifestation some stage like that where things come into existence and very quickly disappear and cease to exist. They become less than zero, but they can also become more than one. But I didn't understand him then, and I don't understand it now.
Well, less than zero are the negative numbers.
Yes, that must have something to do with negative numbers. It's this strange arithmetic. I have difficulty understanding even ordinary arithmetic. So.
I just should mention in my notes, zero to the power of zero equals one.
Zero to the power of zero equals one. But that's a very strange mathematics, isn't it?
But multitude guarding its sum, I don't get that idea either.
It can't. There's many, and of course if you add up all the many, you have a sum. But that multitude, it can't keep that constant sum. Some people are dropping out. Becoming less than some entities are becoming more than one.
Oh, that's probably, it's a psychological thing, perhaps.
Chance, the total of the possibility and impossibility should always be one.
Yeah.
But it's a strange arithmetic, so it can be less than zero and higher than one also. Yeah. It's a strange mathematics, basically.
It's unstable.
Yeah.
Very strange. Anyway, it seems perhaps to have something to do with the beginnings of life. Anyway, let's go on. Who's next?
Arriving at a large and shadowy sense that cared not to define its fleeting drift, the life labored in the strange and mythic air, deluded of her sweet, magnificent sounds, the worlds imagined never yet made true, a lingering glimmer on creation's verge, one strayed and dreamed and never stopped to achieve. To achieve would have destroyed that magic space, the marvels of a twilight wonderland, full of beauty, strangely vainly made. The search of fanciful realities, dim tokens of a splendor sealed above, awoke the passion of the eye's desire, compelled belief on the enamored thought, and drew the heart pathetic to no goal.
Thank you. So we can imagine a subtle life world that is like this. No? Life has reached a stage of large and shadowy sense. Perhaps this is sense in this meaning sensation, or it may be meaning, or both. But that large and shadowy sense doesn't define its direction. Life labors in this strange and mythic air, a myth and dream, but that air is denuded of her sweet, magnificent suns, the wonderful suns that we read about in Canto 3, the glory and the fall of life, the original home, blissful home of life, is full of these sweet, magnificent suns, purple suns. So there, in that realm, one moves in worlds imagined that have never yet been made true or real. Those worlds are like a lingering glimmer, a faint light persisting on the very fringe or edge of creation. So if you are there, like Asvapati is there, you can wander, straying, dreaming, but never stopping to achieve or do something real. If you had tried to do that, that would have destroyed that magical, enchanted space. It's beautiful, no? Pulse of a twilight wonderland. Much later on in the poem, in book 10, we have the dream twilight of the ideal. It must be a beautiful, insubstantial world like that, full of a beauty, strangely made, but in vain, without any significance or meaning. A surge, a wave of fanciful realities. These are dim, faint tokens, signs of a splendor, a secret splendor which exists on some much higher level. And their beauty does attract, wakens up the passion of the eye's desire. We want to see and experience a fact that it is supported by that splendor above. Compelled belief on the enamored thought. It attracts the heart, but it can't present to it any goal. That description continues. Can you read this?
The magic flowed as if of moving scenes, that kept a while their fugitive delusion, for staring lines limned by an abstract art, in a rare scanted light with faint cream brush, and a silver background of insert. An infinite glow of heaven's near to morn, the fire intense conceived but never lit, cast in the air with ardent hints of day. The perfect longing for imperfections turned, illumined, caught by the snare of ignorance, ethereal creatures drawn by body's will. To that promise beating the wings, came hungry for the joy of infinite,
of finite life,
but too divine to trap created souls and share the fate of perishable things. The children of the embodied, unembodied being, arisen from a formless thought in the soul, and chased by an imperishable desire,
immersed the field of the pursuing days, a room that unpersisting failed, worked there. Life was a search of finding another thing.
Thank you. So it really reminds me very much of that dream twilight of the ideal. Faint dawn beginning, hints of colors, dim sounds, you can't see anything clearly. It's very attractive and alluring, but nothing is real, nothing can be seized and held. That is an illusory world which death shows to Savitri, but it has some of these characteristics which Aswapati is experiencing here in this in-between transitional space.
So this is a state of consciousness.
Yes.
And it is a shadow of
something.
The consciousness.
Of something.
So this is already existing, and at some point in the story, forms begin to coalesce and life again fix itself. Mm. Does this sound right?
Something. Yes, but he's already described all that to us in the preceding two cantos, about the emergence of the little life, first the forms, developing forms, and then how those forms could happen because of the spirits, the godheads, the influences that were behind. That's what we read about in the previous canto. So now it's as if he's showing Aswapati passing through this very undefined realm towards the next thing. There will be something else coming. But it's very interesting to read about these children of the unembodied gleam. They haven't taken proper bodies yet. That gleam has arisen from a formless thought in the soul. That gleam gets pursued by an imperishable desire. So this can be seen happening, traversing the field of the pursuing gaze. And who are those beings who come there? Perfect beings who want to experience the charm of imperfection. Illumined beings who've got caught in the snare of ignorance. There are ethereal creatures who don't have any firm material bodies, only ethereal forms, but they want to have bodies. They come to that region of promise. It seems to be a region of promise, and they come beating their invisible wings, and they come there because they are hungry for the joy of finite life. They want to take bodies and be embodied. But they are not yet material enough. They are too divine still to tread our created soil. They are too divine to share the fate of perishable things such as exist in our world.
But are these, including the little beings of the lower light, are they alive? I mean,
yes.
Life to me exists in as a flip side of death. So are these creatures in that state?
No.
Hmm? Yes?
No.
No. No. So,
I mean, they can come and go out of existence,
yes,
but they are not experiencing material death the way that we do, because this is a subtle world.
Yes, so I'm coming back to saying life is not in this place.
This is life. Life is there. It says it clearly at the top of the page. Life labored in a strange and mythic air. And it's not her own native air. It's another place. It's not our world either.
Her energy is working, but she's not getting a foothold.
Something like that, yes.
Yeah, I think Aswapati is passing from the earlier, I think you are reading the earlier plane, but he's passing from that plane to another plane. It's a transitionary plane, as I understand. It's not directly connected to the plane which is already seen of the little beings. Is it like that?
I mean, they must all be connected. But obviously when he's passing on this journey from level to level, it's each time as if he comes to somewhere that's defined. That's what Sri Aurobindo describes for us in each of the cantos. No? But in between, there's this mixed up, undefined area. And there are beings. In that way, they are alive. They have some consciousness, they have some life. They even have some form, which is a bit vague.
They are called intermediate zone.
They must be connected with that intermediate zone where they can get trapped. It even says so here, doesn't it? The illumined caught in the snare of ignorance. Yes. So we will find this kind of space described several times.
Do you have a question about the comparison in book 10 and this book?
Yes.
So what would be the difference there? What I understand is that that had an ideal, but this doesn't have an ideal. Is the main difference between book 10 and this part of the 11?
All those simple words, death shows to Savitri, book of eternal, the eternal night, and then the two dream twilights. And then even the everlasting day. We could say these are symbol worlds that are conjured into existence to teach her something, to show her something, face her with a particular challenge which she needs to experience and show that she can overcome. These seem to be more stages in evolution, if I'm understanding it right.
I think these are very idealistic forces, but they can't manifest here because, as you said, the trouble that down at the bottom, he says, a will that unpersisting failed. It's like a project that you want to do, but it's so idealistic
like
that there doesn't seem to be any place to put it.
Life was a search.
Yeah. I want to know what this limbed means.
Limbed means outlined. Drawn, outlined.
Staring lines means only a few lines, huh?
Yes. It comes also in Book 1, Canto 4, for what the traveller through time, what he sees, a kind of horizon, and maybe there's some hills, but it's just outlined as if in a silver pencil on the red background.
Like sketches of Savitri.
So
limbed by an abstract art would mean that the abstract art only gives a suggestion of the thing, isn't it?
Outlined.
You know, I'm thinking about that state of waking up from surgery.
Mm-hmm.
There is, some people have experienced this, but you don't remember it. There is an amazing place where you are. And then you come back to life. So all the...
You come back to earth, down to earth.
So I noticed it the second surgery. Because I was reminded of it by someone who had many surgeries. And before going into surgery, she said to me, oh, you get to experience that wonderful place.
In between space.
When you're just coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I don't know why that's coming to me, but I'm also remembering the place that Dr. Ibn Alexander went.
Mm-hmm.
And how he wandered around in this world. And for each of us, there is a lesson, I guess, or something.
So that is one thing we those of us who read The Life Divine, will remember
mm-hmm.
that Sri Aurobindo spoke about the importance of these other worlds
mm-hmm.
to us, that we are connected with them, we can have contacts with them, and that can help us to grow psychologically and experience in knowledge. And it's also said here that they are within us, this whole stair. How can Asvapati climb it? He doesn't have to go outside. He's got to explore the different levels of his own being. So even this vague interspace here, it must be part of that. Shall we stop there for today? Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.